3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert.
This is Michelle.
And this is the Rockin' Coasters podcast. We're on day 2 of our summer leg of the Rockin' Coasters tour across America, heading on our way to Dallas. Today, we drove from right outside of Boise to Moab, and it was a day to remember. Michelle, what do you think about last night's hotel stay?
Whew. A little bit rough. As I mentioned on the previous episode, it was a favorite find of Robert's, a gem, if you will. Bed was lumpy. Bed was too small. Had one pillow. I always bring an extra pillow, you guys. Robert left it behind. But that's all right. What did you think of the train?
Bright and early. Woke me up at 5:30 this morning. And then I had, of course, a pretty nasty allergy fit. I don't know if it was the room or what, but I've been sneezing all day and I'm probably pretty stuffy tonight. But I was kind of glad to get out of there. We were in the car by 7 a.m., back on the freeway, heading down on I-84. And the first thing that we do is we crank Sammy Hagar and the Circle. Why is that important? We talked about driving 55 yesterday and the 80 mile an hour speed limits through rural Pacific Northwest. But on part of this leg of the Rock and Roller Tour, we're seeing Sammy Hagar and the Circle. What do you think about Sammy and the guys?
Well, I've always been a fan of Sammy Hagar, so I'm so looking forward to that at the end of our trip. That was a live record, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a lot of fun. He sounds like he is really just enjoying himself, enjoying life. He doesn't sound pressured. He doesn't sound bogged down. And that's important. I mean, he's 70 years old.
For those who don't know much about Sammy Hagar, of course, he started out his career in the early 70s with a band called Montrose. And then he went out and did a solo record for years. And then he was elected as the frontman to Van Halen, that most people call Van Hagar. And I thought that Sammy did a better job than Dave. It was more my style of music than kind of the quirky David Lee Roth stuff. But I really, really liked Sammy and his time with Van Halen. And then after that, he formed another group that he called Chickenfoot. It was a super group, much like The Circle. And now, of course, he is in another super group called The Circle, as we mentioned. And it's him, as of course, on rhythm guitar and lead vocals. You have Vic Johnson, kind of a guitar virtuoso, if you will, on lead. Michael Anthony from Van Halen. And Jason Bonham on the drums. Michelle, did you know that Jason Bonham was John Bonham's son?
I learned that today, as a matter of fact. But we don't want to get too deep into Sammy with him having to be part of this tour.
Oh, yeah. I think we do. I think it's going to be a highlight of this tour. Real quick, Jason Bonham is John Bonham's son. And of course, rock and roll fans know that John Bonham was the drummer for none other than Led Zeppelin. Why do I say all this? Because in their set, they play a lot of Led Zeppelin, Montrose, Van Halen, and of course, some originals as well. So we listened to that for the first hour or so as we worked our way through Idaho and down into Utah. And boy, do I have a story for you about chasing rainbows. But before we do that, what was your experience in Idaho? I know you've never driven through this part of the country before, at least this upper part of the country.
Right. The only time I've been in Idaho was when we drove to West Yellowstone in the early 2000s to participate in a dog sled race there. So this part of Idaho, It's interesting. It reminded me of a lot of other places that we have visited that involve the desert and no trees, a lot of farming, but a lot of irrigating of the farming. Like, it's not green, and nothing of sustenance is growing in this area without irrigation from the Snake River.
Yep, very high desert, dry climate. Didn't feel like 100 degrees, like it feels like 100 degrees at home, does it?
No, it was actually quite comfortable, even though we've been dealing a little bit with rain and things. I did find it interesting. You know, we're following the Oregon Trail, which I am a history buff as much as you are. That's why we like to do these trips. We like to see our country. We like to see historical monuments and national parks along the way. And the Oregon Trail is part of that. But we also crossed the 45th parallel, right?
Yes. And what is that 45th parallel?
That is the spot that we crossed was parallel, or one of the spots for the equator.
It's exactly halfway between the equator and the North Pole. As a quick geography lesson, equator is at zero, North Pole is at 90, so we're at 45th, right there, dead center, top of the world, if you will.
So that's interesting, since we come from Alaska. And we're at the 45th parallel. When we go to Belize, are we going south of the equator?
Nope, not quite south, but we will be way down there and probably, I don't know, 15 degrees or so.
Dang.
Whereas the equator is at zero. So we're traveling the world. And speaking of traveling the world and these road trips, sort of an inspiration to these road trips started when I was a kid. I did my first cross-country trip at 17 years old, and that's the story for today. But I don't know, Michelle, I've probably crisscrossed this country on probably every major highway. I know all the major highways, where they go, where they end up, the best parts to take. And I know that because I've probably done these crisscrosses 9, 10, maybe 11 times, whether it be north or south, east or west, whatever it is, I've done my fair share. And back when I was 17 years old, we were moving across country. My stepfather was in the United States Marine Corps. We were living in Woodbridge, Virginia, and he was stationed to Portland, Oregon. And being the Marine that he is, he was very methodical, very logistics-oriented, and he was entrusting a 17-year-old in a piece of crap, if you will, 1984 Sentra, that I bought as pretty much my first car payment type car. And it was
in 1989.
In 1989. It was my job to drive across. It was my job to get this hoopty across the country. And the way that he kept tabs on us is back in the day, 1988. Everybody had CB radios.
Yeah, we didn't have cell phones.
I had a bag phone, but I did not.
But it didn't have national reach.
It did not. If it did, it was very expensive. So I thought it would be a bright idea to install CB radios in our cars. And they had a luxurious Oldsmobile station wagon, fully loaded, leather interior.
Think of National Lampoon's Vacation,
National Lampoon's.
Guys.
It was to the hilt. And as I said, I had a piece of junk Nissan Sentra. Well, we worked our way across the country, and by the time we made it to about where we were this morning, I'd had enough. I was fed up with the CB radios. My call sign was Firstborn. That is, of course, I was the first.
You guys, hold on a second. He gave out all of the call sign names because before they even started their engines and got on the road, he was pretty stoked about the cannon that he was designing for this trip. Not only was he leaving his friends and going off to his senior year across the country, he took it by the reins and took the initiative to create these call names. So he's Firstborn. His middle brother was Crying Ryan. His younger brother, who's 10 at the time, was the king of goo.
Because he liked Garbage Pail Kids.
Right.
And if you're under the age of 30, you probably have no idea to any of these references. You're probably saying, what the heck is a CB? What the heck is a call sign? Who the heck is the king of goo? What in the world is a family truckster? You've probably never even seen Vacation. But go ahead with the call signs.
If they have no idea about this, they need to check themselves and go watch Smokey and the Bandit.
They have to watch Smokey and the Bandit, and of course they have to watch Vacation, because Vacation truly is the inspiration. That entire movie is the inspiration for this podcast. It's why we do the rock and roller
Absolutely.
Tours. It is why that we do
But when
what
I give
do.
The reference in a moment to the Smokey, they need to know who that is.
Yes. So, and then of course, my stepfather, being the Marine that he is, he was a captain at the time, and back in his college days, he was a big-time college football player, got drafted by the Oakland Raiders, instead of accepting that post, he went on to join the Marine Corps.
Hoorah!
But he was hardcore. I mean, he was 250 pounds, full muscle.
Six something.
I mean, he was a beast of a guy and every much a Marine. But his call sign that I gave him was Captain Mickey. And the reason why that is because his nickname in college was Mickey, because his name was Mike. So Captain Mickey and Firstborn had their way all the way across the country.
Everything was all fun and games.
Until Utah.
Right.
So, as I said,
But tell them how you got across the country. There aren't GPS. There isn't MapQuest. There aren't computerized maps. Tell them all about those triptychs.
Triptychs. So, this will really date our listeners, but if you guys remember triptychs from AAA, you would go into the local AAA office, you would sit down with a travel agent, and you would say, I'm going to XYZ.
I'm going to
Portland, Oregon from Woodbridge, Virginia, and they would ask your preferences. Where do you want to stay? How far do you want to drive?
What type of car you're driving,
et cetera.
They knew your gas mileage.
Yep.
They knew all the ins and outs.
And
they would base it off of the gas prices across the country, too.
Yep. And remember, it was 99 cents a gallon then, so you could drive all day on $10, for sure.
And they would also make your reservations at...
We stayed at the Holiday Inn every night. So, by the time we made it to Utah, we were 3/4 of the way in our journey. I had spent the better part of 2,500 miles of hearing Captain Mickey telling us updates on the CB, things like Captain Mickey, Firstborn, I am at mile marker 340 at 14:30, rest break at 15:15 at exit 437. Just for example, do you got your ears on? And I would reply, this is Firstborn Captain Mickey. I am at exit 431, four clicks back. I will see you at the Texaco at 15:30. That went on and on and on. Well, by the time Utah rolled around, I decided to take a little bit of a side trip. Remember, I'm 17 years old. I saw a rainbow to the south, and I decided to take a very quick detour in my Nissan Sentra on my own and literally chase this rainbow.
On a dirt road.
On a dirt road.
In the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere. And right. Needless to say, when I pulled into Ogden, Utah, at the...
Hold on a second. You don't get to cut out all the good parts, needless to say. You're in your Sentra with Barney, your Springer Spaniel dog.
The family dog.
And you and Barney embark on this journey to go to the pot of gold of the rainbow. You guys, you have to realize, he's 17. He literally thought he was going to reach the end of the rainbow. He didn't realize that rainbows, much like Aurora Borealis, are made of gases and light reflections And so he's driving. He's an hour on this dirt road. And the only thing that made him turn around and stop this continuous chase... Was the gas gauge.
So anyway, I knew where the next stop was. The next stop was Ogden, Utah. I knew that was the spot where we were going to be because we both had the triptychs. And back the triptychs real quickly, it was like a steno notebook, sort of flip your way through on these maps. And it was sort of like following Apple Maps today, but it's in, of course, pre-designed
paper.
Forms
paper
that they set for you for AAA. So I knew how far I had to go to Utah. But just one last thing about Captain Mickey. He doled out the gas money to me in little yellow envelopes in increments of $150 as we made our way across country. I probably got three or four of these little envelopes at, like I said, $15 a fill up, so I could easily make my way across the country on $200 or $300, and I had some spiff money, as you call it, Michelle, to spend on sodas and snacks, but
stickers and shirts.
Yeah, by the time I was in Utah, I had gone through a couple of those yellow envelopes of cash. Remember, we did not have debit cards; we had cold hard cash at the gas station, and that's a story for another day. In the very close proximity to this rainbow chasing. But by the time I made it to Ogden, Utah, it was about 7 o'clock at night. And boy, was Captain Mickey and my mom hot.
9 o'clock.
Nope, it was around 7 o'clock. I pulled into the hotel and we had our way with words, if you will, when I knocked on the door and said I made it. And they were livid. I believe they probably rattled the rafters of that hotel because I did not respond to Captain Mickey's repeated response to see if I had my ears on because I was chasing rainbows. And if you know anything about CBs, you know they are line of sight. So as soon as I took that left turn, I was out of line of sight and I was off the grid, if you will, for this trip. So I would imagine Captain Mickey got his ear.
You realize this is at the height of a lot of those serial killers.
Yep, but I would have believed that Captain Mickey got an earful for probably 100 or so miles from my mom sitting next to him, dutifully the navigator that she was. And she probably told him over and over again, Mike, you need to turn around. Mike, you need to turn around. Mike, you need to turn around. But he had a schedule to keep. He did not turn around. So by the time I rolled into the Holiday Inn in Ogden, he was pissed. I was upset. I needed some food. And I was told that in this part of the world, everything closed at 7 p.m. And they were not lying. When I went to search for the local Pizza Hut or a burger joint, everything was closed at 9 p.m. So I went to bed hungry. Needless to say, I probably could have gone to the 7-Eleven or the Circle K or the AM/PM or whatever it was and grabbed a snack. But I went to bed hungry. And by the time we sat down for our morning briefing.
Debrief and breakfast?
Yep. Every morning was breakfast, a sit-down breakfast at a Holiday Inn, 7 a.m. sharp, 0700, as Captain Mickey would say. And we would get the briefing for the next 500 miles or so. So that breakfast did not go well. The rest of the trip to Portland was not as an eventful trip as before. But it sure did bring up back a lot of memories, didn't it, Michelle? I know you had a laugh or two.
I had a laugh or two. But I had a laugh or two because I know that very left turn is why you have spent the last however many years making sure that you have an adventure or two set aside to go on every year.
Yes, and again, sort of an inspiration for these rock and roller tours and, of course, ancillary this podcast.
Well, you've never seen, and you've told me about your family trips. All of us have the nightmare road trip to Florida or Southern California or whatever, but your trips always involve a rigid schedule, no side trips, no fun, no adventure, no exploration. And so I think that because your childhood road trips were so like that, so rigid, that you vowed to yourself that fateful day when you made the left turn, you were always going to do something fun.
Yep. As I'm wearing this shirt today.
Not all who
wander
are lost.
And I made that left turn. So I was lost, but I decided to wander. I made it back safe and sound. And as they say, the rest is history. So we passed that milestone marker there in Ogden this morning and made our way into Salt Lake at around lunchtime. And we decided to grab a quick lunch. It was Michelle's first time ever at In-N-Out. People rave about In-N-Out. They absolutely love it. If you're listening outside of America, it is a burger joint founded in Southern California, I believe in the 50s or 60s. And this is the spot because they're only on the West Coast-ish of the United States, about as far east or so as Colorado, and I know they just recently ventured out that way, but most of them are in California, Arizona, Utah, of course, Nevada. But this is your first time at In-N-Out. You did not find it as appealing as the rest of the world.
It wasn't that it wasn't appealing. I just don't get the hype. I mean, we had the Mammoth Orange roadside burger joint in Central California, the San Joaquin Valley, where I am from. And for any of my school friends, they all remember the Mammoth Orange. The Mammoth Orange would put In-N-Out to shame. So that's my first burger joint. It was before I ever had McDonald's or anything else. So I compare that, of course, like anybody else would. Your first one is usually the best one. It sets the bar. And so In-N-Out, it was meh. I just don't get the hype.
I think the hype is all around supply and demand. The rest of the country's had it when they traveled out this way. They had it in California or one of these other states. And then they go to the to their hometown, and they don't have it there. It's very similar to how we are in Alaska, where people go crazy over Chick-fil-A and Jack in the Box because we don't have that up there. We have McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's, etc. And if you remember, Michelle, when Olive Garden, the Denny's of Italian, opened up in Anchorage right after we moved up
there.
Well,
we got the Olive Garden, the Texas Roadhouse, and what was the other one? They all opened within like a year of each other.
But guys, I know you're saying Olive Garden. Olive Garden was such a hit in Alaska. They had a 2 or 3 hour wait for a table in Anchorage.
For months.
For months. You would stand outside.
For months.
To go in and have that delicious Olive Garden. So anyway, we had lunch at In-N-Out and then made our way south. Michelle took over the driving duties for a couple hundred miles, and we made our way towards Moab, Utah. This was a side trip that you had planned before we left. You had said that
this was my chasing rainbows because you didn't realize how far out of the way we are until the rest stop when you handed me the keys.
Yes, yes. So we pulled into the Moab area at about almost 5 o'clock this afternoon.
It was 4:30.
4:30, yeah. And we got the last reservation to get into the park. You have to have reservations from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. You pay $30 to get into Arches National Park. We got there at the last reservation spot.
But wait, cool little tidbit. We're sitting there at the ranger pulling in, and she happens to be from
Bethel, Alaska.
Bethel, Alaska.
Yes. You meet a lot of Alaskan folks when you're driving around the country. And Michelle says, every single time we stop, we're from Alaska. I don't know why she says that.
Because Michelle, of that. Because somebody else will say, I'm from Alaska.
Yes. So we took a trip through Arches National Park. We're sitting here in the hotel right now, and I'm looking at photos of these arches. They don't quite look like this in person. These are heavily doctored tourist-type photos. But what do you think about that, Michelle? Everybody's seen these photos of the arches.
I said it in the park even. I said the photos, as spectacular as they are, they don't really do it justice because the coloring that the light catches from the different layers of the salt bed turned to rock, it just does not capture the actual beauty. And we were cloud covered today. We had very little refracting light. And it was just absolutely breathtaking and amazing. And you really did feel like you were thrown back to 300 million years ago.
Yeah. It was beautiful scenery. And, of course, these are always work trips. So we had to cut our trip short in Arches National Park because you had a couple of Zoom calls with no service. Tell us about that.
Yes, I had two client classes scheduled on Zoom. And lo and behold, we have absolutely zero service. And so we're done with our park trip, turned around, got back into some cell phone service area about 10 miles towards the exit of the park, and got Nicole on the line. She jumped in and took the reins and handled those calls like a champ. And so we're still doing our jobs.
So Nicole, for you guys that may not know, is our daughter. She is also our business partner for our business, Alaska Dog Works, and she's holding down the fort literally as we are down here on our travel. So we get to Deadwood. It seems like sort of like a Deadwood-esque type town here, definitely a tourist town, Moab is. And we get here at around 6-ish or so, and we grab pizza at, I'm looking for the name of it, Antigna? Forna, I believe is how you say it. Pretty good stuff. Tell us about it.
So it's a cute little place, a Napoleon-style wood-fired pizza joint. They have pastas and things. I enjoyed a very nice limoncello drink. You enjoyed pizza as well as I did. I had a porchetta pizza. What did you have?
I had just the Meat Lovers.
Of course.
With some fancy Italian name.
Of course. And but what was the best thing? It was that appetizer we had.
Yeah, it was prosciutto and caramelized onions and sort of a
quick fry pizza dough.
Yep. So sort of like fry bread.
Yeah. It was exactly excellent. Like fry bread.
And I made a comment saying that often the appetizers are better than the main course at a lot of these type of places.
Sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. And then we walked around town, did a little bit of window shopping.
I grabbed an ice cream at the Spoke restaurant / ice cream parlor. It looked like it was the hit of town. We saw everybody walking.
Well, they had the walk-up window.
Yeah, it had a walk-up window. Everybody walking through town with their ice cream cones, as I said. Definitely a little tourist stop here. Reminds me of Glittering Gulch in Denali National Park. It reminds me of Deadwood. It reminds me of Homer. It reminds me of all those places that we visited with lots of curiosity-type shops and souvenir shops and that sort of thing. But this is a big hotbed for outdoor adventure, whether it be four-wheeling or rock climbing or river
mountain
rafting,
biking,
that sort of stuff. This is the place to go. So I know you always wanted to go here. I've always heard about this place but never thought I would get down this way.
Well, we lived in Colorado for 15 years and we never got to. So when we lived in Colorado, you guys, travel was limited because that's when our business was in its infancy and we were our kids were young, and quite honestly, doing the type of traveling that we do is hard on kids, especially when homeschooling wasn't really cool. And so we chose to do more of a home base for our kids, and we traveled, but not on heavy road trips like this.
Yeah, all of our road trips with the kids was usually to mushing races.
Right.
And we would right. pack up in the morning on Friday. Take the
Thursday.
Kids out
of, it was a Thursday, Monday.
Thursday, Monday.
We would leave Thursday and return Monday.
So take the kids out of school for a day or two. And like Michelle said, homeschooling was not a big deal then. So they would get packets of work to do on the road.
Yeah, their teachers frowned on that.
Or in their in the hotel room. And we would race sled dogs on the weekend and then drive back. But we never went more than 500 miles.
Right.
Typically, because that's a day's
drive.
Well,
the farthest trip was one of their favorite trips, and that was going to Hill City in South Dakota, because they really did enjoy seeing Mount Rushmore and the Crazy Horse Monument.
Yep. So we checked into another roadside-type hotel. This one is called the Big Horn Lodge. Compared to the Thunderbird, what do you think about
God,
our accommodations?
This is a Ritz-Carlton. Compared.
Yep, we're recording this at 9:30 p.m. on our second day of the tour. Tomorrow we're heading south on the shortest day of our trip, about 350 miles, about 5 hours to Albuquerque. And we're hoping to ride our first roller coaster on this leg of trip. I guess New Mexico has one roller coaster. But I remarked at dinner that we were 5.5 hours from an airport here in Moab. And that's a big deal when you like to travel. I don't think there's a lot of folks doing traveling to Hawaii or to other far-off locales. When you have a five-hour trip just to get to the airport, that's a long way, isn't it?
Well, relatively speaking, we drive a long way to the airport. Some people don't like the fact that they're 70 miles from an airport. When we lived in Denver, the DIA is a long ways from the metro area in Denver, so much so that they added the light rail to it because people would complain so much about the drive just from metro Denver. And we lived in the mountains. We lived in Bailey, Colorado. Bailey, Colorado to the airport is just about 70 miles. So for some reason, I have always lived 70 miles from a major airport. Where I grew up in California, the nearest airport was in Fresno, about 70 miles from where I grew up.
So Michelle, I know this is sort of a bucket list side trip for you.
It was, yeah. We didn't do a lot of adventuring things, but it was still fun.
Would you ever live here if you had your druthers? Would you live in a place like this?
While it's got its own beauty and I can appreciate it, no, this is not my style. I definitely like big trees. I definitely love the smell of the ocean. I need to be somewhere. I mean, honestly, the Pacific Northwest is both of us.
There you have it, guys. We're on day two of our epic journey onward towards Dallas, going from Seattle to Dallas, and then Dallas back to Seattle, about a 3,000-mile road trip in about 2 weeks. We're going to see a lot of roller coasters. We're going to go to a podcast conference and even a couple very cool conferences. Michelle?
Cool concerts.
Concerts. We're tired, as you can hear. What do you have for us coming up in the next couple of days?
So we will be stopping at the Four Corners, another bucket list item. And I don't know that we're spending the night in Albuquerque. I think we could go a little farther.
Not if we're riding the roller coaster.
It's just one. We've done an entire two amusement parks in one day and still drove.
We'll see. Tomorrow's show, we will be somewhere around Albuquerque, 5 states into our journey. We will see you guys next time. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Follow us on social media. Search Rock In Coasters or rockincoasters.com. And if you really enjoy the love, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/firstballmedia. And we even have a QCR code on the back of our car that says follow us. And we got our first two hits today.
That's right.
In the Arches National Park, because we have That's a video right. on there with some analytics, and it will pop up and let us know that people watched it. Two people watched it while we were in the national park. So,
but it also is cool. I got to add this. We did put our plate on our car. This is Dog Works. So if you see us out and about in the lower 48 with our white RAV4 with the Dog Works Alaska license plates, honk.
Honk. Let us know. So we went out a little long today because of my rainbow chasing story. We will see you guys from the road tomorrow. Talk to you later.
This is Michelle and Robert for Rockin' Coasters Podcast on First Paw Media.